Going to start tonight's show with Gaelic Games because the Cork Hurlers drew at Limerick in the opening round of the Alliance League Division 1B last night. 17 points apiece is how it finished in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, despite Limerick being down to 14 men for around 40 of the 17 minutes. Patrick Corgan scored 8 points. Conor Lehan, Cian McCarthy, Stephen Moylan and Alan Cadigan scored 2 each, and Michael O'Sullivan also scored a point. We'll get some post-match reaction now, first from the Cork management team of Jimmy Barry Murphy and selector Johnny Crowley.
Jimmy, a great start to the league, entertaining, but I guess you must be disappointed you didn't see that one out.
Yeah, a bit disappointed, I suppose, the fact that we Limerick only 14 men for quite a bit of the game and we didn't take full advantage of that. But we didn't lose the game, but at the end of the day, I don't know, was a lot of positives to it. We were disappointed overall this day.
And after such a blistering start as well, I think you had 8 points from play after 13 minutes. Pat Horgan had 4, Cian McCarthy had 2, and everything seemed to be going your way.
Yeah, that's right. And then but in the second half, we didn't use the ball as well as we should have probably, and Limerick, fairness, stuck very manfully to the task, I thought, and we just have a look at the game again and see where we didn't feel we used the ball as well as we should have.
Paul Brown, the Limerick midfielder, was a man of the match, and he said it's an old cliche that often the team in numerical ascendancy doesn't quite know how to use the spare man. I mean, was that a difficulty for you tonight?
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, over the last couple of years we've seen the extra man being a great help to you, but I mean, on the night we just didn't use as well as we'd like to.
And I guess it just keeps things so beautifully open in Division 1B, because we talked, I was saying it to TJ Ryan, how important it was that the losers tonight were in a really difficult spot, and it turns out neither of you are there now.
Yeah, it's quite an open league. Certainly it's going to be very competitive. We've both got to play other teams who are equally going to be competitive, and just a matter of waiting to see how it pans out now.
And can you tell me, Jimmy, about the mindset of Cork heading into this year? Because obviously in the face of it, a wonderful season, you were narrowly beaten and within seconds of winning the All-Ireland, yet it was still a season in which you lost a provincial final and All-Ireland final and got relegated. So, I mean, what does 2014 hold? What are the objectives now?
Well, we want to develop the panel as much as we can. My ambition is to have competition for places. That's why you saw so many debutants tonight and bringing players in who haven't played at this level before. So from that point of view, it's a learning process for a lot of those players, and we hope to develop that over the rest of the league campaign and make us really competitive come the championship.
So I guess in regards to that, you must have been delighted with the contribution, particularly of Alan Cadigan as he came off the bench.
Yeah, Alan did very, very well when he came in, and you know, a number of other young players who we feel are coming to the panel, Mike Cahalan as well as a minor last year. A lot of players like that have a lot to learn, and Alan certainly did very, very well tonight.
But Johnny, I suppose you thought Michael O'Sullivan had won it there at the end.
Yeah, we thought he had, but sure, look, we ourselves and a few minutes left in games, it doesn't work at times. But anyway, to be fair to Limerick, they plugged away, they won a good ball when it came out, and we have no cribs with it. Limerick worked very hard in the second half, and they got their result out of the game, so I've no fair play to them.
And you started the game really well, the first 20 minutes, very sharp.
Very sharp, and in fairness, no, we seemed to be on top of the game for the first 15, 17 minutes, and then sending off seemed to kind of put us back. We took our foot off the pedal, and the whole thing went kind of array at that stage. And then we left Limerick back into the game, I thought, you know. So, and we gave away a lot of frees there. Free take, got, I think, 10 frees. So, you know, you can't give away that in respect to win games, you know.
Did you get much of a view of the sending off?
No, I didn't get much of it, but I saw his eye after, and I didn't see it now, but he has a good belt in his eye. So,
do you think it was a typical early season kind of game?
It was, that's the way they're going to be, but like, I suppose there was a lot more at stake in this one, maybe for the two of us, so it keeps the whole thing open, and for the league ahead now, and it's coming down now to every game that you play now is an important game again, you know. So
it was a good game to focus the mind.
It was a good game to focus the mind, it was, and I don't know, look at it, probably hard, but the game, we played them very patchy in the second half, and I think we would have to look at it and see where things went wrong, you know.
And what have preparations been like this week with the weather? Has it affected things?
Well, no, we trained every night, and every time we had to train, we trained. Now, maybe we didn't get in the field as much as we did. We had to do the tracking different nights because the fields were so poor. But we trained every night, and we're happy enough, and hopefully going forward that the weather will improve. Like, the pitch is as good as you're going to get anywhere for this time of the year, so you can't quibble about weather, about pitches. You know, we had chances on the day, and we didn't take them. I suppose Limerick will say they had a few chances well, and they, you know, that's the way it goes.
And a couple of knocks tonight, Conor Lehan,
Aidan got a belt, but at the end of the day, they had a few injuries as well. Come on, you're going to get that. That's the reason you're panel at 30.
And Steve McDonald missed the game tonight.
He did. He was he's a lass, and so we'll have to. But he'd be okay for next week.
And next week, now Laois
above in Moore Park. Yeah, it won't be easy. So it'll be, by the time you go up to Laois, you'll always get your belly full there, so I don't see it as any different. Anyone who'll go to Laois will always, you'll learn what you get.
And I suppose with the draw tonight, it makes every game extra important.
Exactly.
It might come down to points.
Exactly,
difference.
It could come down to that at the end of the day, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, spoke to a few Limerick fans leaving Cork last night, and they were pretty happy to get a draw after the way the game started and the red card and all that kind of stuff. Here's their manager, TJ Ryan, speaking to our colleague in News Talk, Dave McIntyre.
TJ, you were 8-2 down after 13 minutes. I say you might have taken a point at that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose we didn't have a great start, and I suppose when you get down to 14 men, top of that, like, I mean, it was difficult, but in fairness to our lads, to fight, the spirit, to drive, really good, has to be happy with that.
Yeah, man down, I guess it makes life difficult, but Cork didn't really seem to know how to use that spare man.
Yeah, I suppose sometimes it can be difficult, you know, but I said, in fairness to our fellas, like, they work great all over the field, they upped it, and, you know what I'm saying, in fairness to them, everywhere, and said we scored our frees and we took the few chances that came our way, and we, I think we only had two wides in the second half, like, so a lot of things we improved on. But as I said, look, my heart goes up to the players, couldn't ask for any more. Effort was brilliant, and it was great to come away with something, because I think we deserved it.
What's the objective this year? Because obviously 2013 was a huge year for Limerick. The end of that 16-year wait went out a provincial championship, 17-year wait, yeah, in fact. But I guess ultimately you want to take that extra step now in 2014.
Absolutely. I said my objective was very simple, is to win every game, and this was a difficult start to come down here to Cork in the league. Is you know what I'm saying? It's not an easy place, and look, I think tonight, I said, look, I was delighted to get something out of the game. I think we deserved it, and look, we've got answer next week. Now, I said, you can't take any game for granted in this division. It's competitive enough. We have to try and go and win next weekend.
Obviously, both Cork and Limerick want to get out of Division 1B, and we talked the loser tonight was going to be in a seriously sticky spot. Neither are in that position now. It's still all to play for, so open now.
Absolutely, all to play for now. So yeah, it becomes kind of, every game becomes vital.
Yeah, absolutely. At this stage, after that draw last night, I took back on the game last night, the draw between Limerick and Cork. I've been speaking to All-Ireland winner with the Rebels, Pat Mulcahy.
I said after, you know, 10, 15 minutes, Cork were absolutely flying it, and they were up 5 or 6 points, and they looked to be much sharper than Limerick, and looked to have a bit more done, actually. But at that point, then, you know, once Limerick had the man sent off, once they got to half time, within 2 or 3 points, we all felt it was going to be a tight game. And I think the 10 minutes goal, Limerick felt that there was something in it for them. And they got the equaliser, obviously, in injury time. So overall, probably a disappointing result for Cork, given the start that they made.
Yeah, like, I suppose, like, what kind of adds to the disappointment is that last year, whenever Cork played a team who went down to 14 men, they managed it really well and they really took advantage. Why do you think that didn't happen last night?
I suppose it was twofold. One, I suppose Conor Sullivan had a lot to do with it, in that, you know, last year he's the ultimate extra man, in that his distribution of all is top class. And any time last year Cork had the extra man, they used Conor as that extra person at the back, and his distribution out of defence was excellent. Whereas last night, you know, Limerick brought the other corner forward out to midfield, and they basically crowded their half back line and allowed Cork possession in their full back line. And maybe Cork's possession out of the full back line wasn't as good as it should be, and, you know, Limerick's half back line got on top, because a lot of high aim, this ball went down on top of them, and they managed to defend it quite well and pick Cork off with freeze at the other side. But I suppose the main two reasons really were the fact that the Limerick put through an extra man to cover in front of their half back line, and the fact that Conor Sullivan probably didn't play last night.
Yeah, is there many ways around that? I mean, like obviously when Limerick packed that area in the field, it's quite hard to get past it and stuff like that. But like, is there kind of a go-to tactic when the opposition goes down to 14 men that most teams go for?
Well, it's difficult, and, you know, and in fairness to Limerick, I thought they were very clever, and they brought back the extra man and just left Dowling inside the edge of the square and left Cork with an extra man there, and they just packed midfield and their own half back line. You know, I suppose in fairness last night, Joe, the conditions were poor, even though the pitch was looked very well for that time of year. I would think that, you know, like, look, we've had a lot of rain and the conditions weren't great, so it's hard to get fastball into the full forward line. But having said that, I thought Cork probably could have been more measured out of defence and hit them midfield more often and take scores from out the field or trying to get in behind the Limerick half back line. And if they did that, maybe they could have picked off more scores and they would have forced Limerick to come out and attack them a little bit more. But I think the main thing is to be patient when you have the extra man and to walk the defence and try and stretch them a little bit. Cork has a lot of aimless ball into a full forward line, and the Limerick half back line, as I said, cleaned up.
Yeah, have you played as the extra man before in big games?
I have once or twice, but look, to be honest, Joe, it's a very, very difficult thing, because you're so used of marking a man and playing a game where you have a job number one to mark a man and job number two is go out and play hurling when you have the ball. But and very few fellas can do it. But in Cork, the best fella I've seen is Conor Sullivan, because he just has a tremendous distribution. He's very patient in the ball and he never panics in the ball. But it certainly does take a specific type of player to play that type of game. And I think Cork definitely suffered freeze-off last night.
Yeah, Conor was brilliant at that last year, right? There was an article in the Examiner during the week It was about the importance of a good free taker in hurling, and Shane Dowling really proved it last night, didn't he?
It is. You know, so this time of the year, the balls are going to be dropping maybe 5 or 10 yards shorter than they would be in the summertime, given the moisture in the air. You know, so like I suppose, you know, even the Nash's frees last night were dropping a little bit shorter than they were last August against Dublin or against Clare. So Dowling put a few over outside his own 65, and given the conditions, you know, it was the top class free taking, and you know, he was worth his weight in gold there last night. In particular, again this time of year, Joe, you know, you must take into account that conditions aren't great, and given the weather of the last few days, I think Dowling's free taking was excellent last night.
Yeah, I suppose like when he gets so many frees and he got a few 65 as well, but I suppose just to focus on the freeze, you'd have to ask the question about the discipline of the Cork defending. Was that a bit off last night?
It was. Now, you know, I thought the ref was a little bit harsh on Cork, and certainly the crowd would have thought so. Look, maybe it was a partisan crowd, but I thought it was a little bit harsh on Cork. The Cork forwards certainly didn't get the same level of freeze as the Limerick forwards seemed to get. But you know, look, it's this time of the year, a slip here, a slip there, with slippery underfoot conditions can give away a freeze. You know, I suppose it's something for Jimmy to work on, but I don't think he'd be overly concerned this time of year. They're bound to be rusty. Look, they're back from holidays 3 weeks or 4 weeks, and they're bound to maybe be a little bit late in the tackle here and there, but you know, the effort was good. I think that's all you could ask for at this stage in the season.
Yeah, a lot of people excited that Aidan Walsh got his start last night. How did he look?
Look, he's flying fit, but obviously it's like, look, at the end of the day, it was his very first league match for Cork. You know, it's been a long time since he's played under 21, since Cork's been 2 or 3 years. So look, he's a long lot of hurling to do to get to the required level into county hurling, particularly the ball. You don't get a second chance. You know, you have to win your primary position, and you have to be, you know, you have to play a lot of hurling to play at that level. So he's an awful lot to do, I think. You know, while he showed some promise, he has a lot to do, and he probably needs to play every single league match to get him up to the pace of the game. But what he does do, Joe, is he draws attackers or defenders towards him, and he will create space for the rest of the Cork forwards if he's playing. But you know, he certainly went up for a good few balls last night, and they didn't just quite stick. But he needs a good few league matches to get up to the pace of intercounty hurling.
Yeah, what about some of the other newer guys? You had Mark Ellis in there, you had Rob O'Shea and guys like that, and Michael Callaghan coming off the bench, and Alan Cadigan and Paul Hockney and all these guys. Did any one of them stand out for you?
I suppose to pick it up, one was Alan Kelligan. You know, he picked off one or two points, and he looked sharp at the edge of the square when he came on. He was probably the one person that did stand out. The rest were as good as what was on the pitch, but probably weren't anyway, you know, exceptional. You know, I suppose William Egan stood out at the back for Cork. You know, he probably had points proved from the All-Ireland final last year, but he did have a good game in the half-back line. But I think last night, again, it was difficult to judge Joe Dell, but those new boys have probably won 2 or 3 games, league games under their belts to see where they are. But it was last night, after all, was just a starting point.
Yeah, like you've been in these games before, in the opening round of the league. Is a lot of it, especially when the lads weren't away on holidays and that they haven't played really a game this year, is it kind of shaking the cobwebs out more than anything in the opening game and hopefully not losing?
It is, absolutely. Look, last year, the first round of the league against Tipperary, it was obvious that Cork had a tremendous amount of work and hurling and fitness done. And the beautiful conditions were far different than last year's. I remember the good game of hurling against Tipperary, as we all remember. But, you know, they ended up getting relegated from the league. So this year, maybe they're better off starting a bit slowly in building. You know, I would assume that they're looking to win the Division 1B competition and to get back up to the top competition again next year. But, look, there was plenty to work on, I would think. But, you know, at least it didn't lose the match of Limerick, so they're not playing catch up for the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, Laois next Saturday up in Portlaoise, and they had kind of a surprise win over Offaly this afternoon. Like obviously a game Cork will expect to win, but I mean, like, what would you like to see them maybe improve on up there next weekend?
It's going to be a difficult assignment again, given the conditions. If they get a day like, you know, today or during the week, it's going to be very difficult up there. They have a good manager over them. They've made great progress last year. They ran Galway close, and they will be well organised, well coached, and as everyone knows, Laois have plenty of good hurlers. So if Cork aren't on their toes, they could be under pressure there next week. But having said that, you'd expect Cork to come out from a win. You'd expect the Limerick match to be the toughest game in their group. Obviously Offaly and Wexford will be a challenge as well, but you expect maybe Laois to come in after that. But as I said, if Cork don't go up there focused, they could be under pressure if Laois are with them running to the final quarter of the match.
Always great to hear from Pat Mulcahy on the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Looking back on Cork's draw with Limerick in the Allianz Hurling League last night. 17 points apiece is how it finished. And they face Laois next Saturday evening in Port Laois for round two. Big congratulations to the UCC Camogie team on winning the Purcell Cup today. They beat DIT in the final. That was 111 to 7 points. So congrats to all involved there. We're going to turn the spotlight on to Australia now for a few minutes, because Glengariff native Linda Holland is a defensive back for the Western Australia Angels in the Legends National League. It's a women's 7-on-7 tackle American Football League based down under. And to find out more, I've been speaking to Linda.
I actually only learned how to play Gaelic football properly when I was in college. In second year in college, I had quite a lot of GA heads in my class, and you know, because we were doing recreation and leisure management. They kind of encouraged me, and Keith Ricken there, the GA development officer at CIT, the poor lad, he actually had to teach me how to play Gaelic football. So, I feel sorry for him. But yeah, we came a long way and played with CIT for a little bit, and Tim went on and played with Nemo Rangers ladies, and we won the Junior C Championship that year. I came out here, and yeah, I've pretty much been playing Gaelic football since I came out. So yeah, that's 10 years now, I suppose. So yeah.
Wow. And just like, can we just fast forward maybe to the last year, or like, when were you first aware of the Legends Football League and the Western Australian Angels and all that?
I had been playing Gaelic football with St Finbar's here in Perth in 2012. And we had literally just finished the season out. I had been president of the club that year as well. And I played state with WA that year as well. And we got to the final of the Western of the Gaelic Championships here in Australia. And I was just, I suppose I just needed a break from Gaelic. It was a full-on year that year. And I just needed a break, needed to do something different. So that was October, and I planned on just taking a year out to just, you know, do my own thing, do a bit of CrossFit, do whatever I wanted, really. And about a month later, the trials for the WA Angels came up, and I was fit enough at the time, so I said I'd just go down for the crack and see what what it involved. I got through that day, and then, you know, we began training pretty much straight away, and we had a second round of trials, and yeah, so there was about 80 of us to begin with, and every couple of weeks they'd cut a few girls, so you never knew if you were safe. It was the kind of team where you never know who your starting girls are or anything like that. You're just constantly fighting and, you know, working hard for your spot on a starting place on the team. And yeah, luckily I got through, and I suppose, yeah, the last few months have just been absolutely mental. So yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, like, were the skills that Keith Rick and taught you in CIT very transferable, or is it a completely different sport?
I suppose, you know, I grew up playing like golf with Glengariff Golf Club back home. Yeah. And I played on a lot of, you know, I would have played teams with the club and, you know, for different things throughout West Cork and stuff. But really playing Gaelic football, and, you know, I played a bit of hockey and rugby all in CIT. It's just that team spirit and that team, you know, everything to do with a team that you could imagine. I suppose, you know, CIT, they were my days to learn, you know, those, that kind of a attitude. And yeah, I suppose I came over here and, you know, I was playing Gaelic, and then yeah, I just, you know, brought that. I suppose when you've played in a team, you know what goes on, and you know you can't be selfish, and you're not playing for yourself, you're playing as part of a team, and you're just always encouraging everyone beside you. And you know, I suppose, yeah, that was definitely the transferable part. Other than that, it was basically learned everything from scratch. We even learned pretty much how to run taking off and, you know, sprinter stances and stuff like that. Because you need to stay low to the ground when you're taking off. You need to, you know, choppy feet. And really, we only really run about 10 or 15 yards. So we don't do, our sprint training isn't like, you know, 100 yards for distance or anything like that. We just do, you know, quick 10 yard off the mark sprints, 10 to 40 yards. So yeah, it's been that side of it was the beginning. And then, yeah, skills we're taught them from scratch. And yeah, probably one of the most technical sports I've ever come across in my life. So
I was reading an interview you did with the Southern Star, and it was just about the training and conditioning you do, and like you said, you were flipping 230 kg tractor tires, doing shuttle runs and tackle bags and all this kind of stuff. The training sounds really, really tough and really intense.
Yeah, so at the start, that was what we were doing, a lot of that at the start. And then, you know, that was to build our foundation of strength, because you obviously have to be very strong. And with American football as well, it's all about bringing your hips through on a tackle. So you come through low and, you know, you drive up through your feet and through your hips. So that's where the tractor tire flipping came into it. And then, yeah, pretty much from there, then it was, we'd have 2 days a week of football training for 2.5 hours. Okay. One of those sessions was on a Sunday morning at 6:30 in the morning. So yeah, we did that for, you know, 12 to 15 months. So yeah, there was no Saturday night, no Saturday night outs or anything like that. It was, you know, you just have to focus on the job at hand, and it teaches you discipline as well, because, you know, we were just committed to training hard for the team, and, you know, wanting to make your mark on the team and get your spot. And yeah, then the football skills, obviously they were quite difficult to learn to begin with, because it's all lingo, you know. So it's all there's calls for everything, there's tactics for everything. It's the smallest thing, like having, you know, lining up on the line and having your right foot forward instead of your left foot forward, or the way you hold your hands, or the way, you know, it's all those little things. Are, yeah, you know, watching, you know who you're supposed to be marking and stuff like that. And yeah, it's just all those little technical pieces, and then combining that all into one. And yeah, it's been absolutely crazy. You just mental.
Yeah, I can imagine. Like, I looked at a few videos of the sport online, and some of the hits are absolutely brutal. What's the kind of the level of injury you pick up in this? And like, because it doesn't look like there's much protection for you anyway. Well, apart from the shoulders and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, there is. So we hit hard. Absolutely hit hard, and you're encouraged to hit hard as well. And you know, you want to hit hard because you don't want the girls to get past you. And it's not like in football or rugby where, you know, it's okay, it's a couple of feet here and there. You know, it literally comes down to inches, and you don't want them to gain any inches. You know, they have 10 yards is the space they need to, you know, the distance they need to make to get the down, and you just don't want that to happen, you know, like, so you're fighting for your inches every time, not just your yards. We hit hard, we hit low, and you've got to, you know, we've got gum shields, helmets, the shoulder pads as well. But I suppose you're conditioned after a while, and you just learn to take it, and you learn how to hit so you don't always injure yourself. But you can't, you know, necessarily protect yourself all the time, but you do what you can. And I suppose there's been a few needles to knees and shoulders, and, you know, things like that. Things that you know, your joints that you're using quite forcefully all the time. So yeah, bruises here and there, but nothing you wouldn't get if you were on a Gaelic football field or in Ireland or rugby or anything like that. And you just condition to it after a while. You know, we lift very heavy weights in the gym and stuff like that as well. So I'd have girls there, you know, you could get lifting 100 to 140 kilos, some of the girls are, you know, squatting anywhere between 80 and 100 kilos. And, you know, it's just building those major muscles, and, you know, just having that explosivity through your hips and through your quads and your hamstrings. And, you know, you learn to take the hits after a while, and it's all part and parcel of it, I suppose.
Yeah, I actually saw a video of you. There's kind of like a 2-minute video focusing on you, and something that was pretty funny on it was your celebration. It's kind of an Irish dance or a jig or something like that. Is that trademark Linda Holland?
Well, we had two home games, and at the first home game, our offense got introduced. So our 7 starting offense got introduced. So this little, what you didn't see was a little piece comes up on the screen in the corner of the field, and you kind of introduce yourself. So and after you've introduced yourself, you come onto the field. So this was our night to introduce ourselves. We had about 5,000 people in the stands. I had about 100 Irish in the stands as well. I could see them there with their flags and stuff. And you're encouraged to be unique, be different, and be yourself.
Right.
And I'm the only Irish person in the league, so obviously I'm going to, you know, I'm going to try and get my heritage and my country out there as much as I can. So that's why I wear the Irish flag bandana. I had been saying to some of the girls, like, I'm going to do my sevens. And I had showed them in the dressing room earlier that day what the sevens were, and they were loving it. They're like, you have to do it. So I did my piece on the screen, you know, Linda Holland, defensive end, hometown, West Cork, Ireland.
Yeah.
And then you run out and the whole crowd goes crazy, and you just do your piece for, you know, 5 to 10 seconds. So I literally did my sevens, 1, 2, 3s, my sevens, and then you run up the field and you, like, high five all the crowd. And it's just, it's crazy, like, it's absolutely mental. And that's the kind of start to the game, because it's a sport and it's a show at the same time, you know. So you have to have your two personalities. You have to be able to flick that switch and entertain the crowd, and then flick that switch and be that sports person on the field. So it's definitely me. Like, anyone who knows me, they definitely know that's my character. I love to have the crack, but I can flick that switch as well and just, you know, perform and you know, dedicate myself to what I'm doing at that given time. So yeah, it would be trademark Linda Holland now.
Just to talk about the sport itself, it was formerly known as the Lingerie Football League, and it's been rebranded and it's the Legends Football League now and stuff like that. And just because of that, I've seen videos, and it's a proper high impact sport. What's the reaction been like since the rebranding and all of that?
Well, I think it's been good for us here in Australia, because obviously the league was originally created in 2009, and it was at the time the Lingerie Football League, and at the same time it was just created as a show. So pretty much Hugh Hefner and Mitchell Mortaza, the owner of the league, they basically got this group of models together to do a halftime show, to rival the halftime show of the Super Bowl, and that's pretty much how it started, just as a bit of fun and you know, something different to the NFL, you know. So then the next year they said they might, you know, wow, there was a really good reaction, and they might actually try and, you know, make this show into a sport. And they held auditions, you know, and trials, and, you know, ex-collegiate athletes were turning up, and, you know, they were like, wow, you know, this, we might actually be able to make this a legitimate sport. So that was kind of pretty much, you know, your first and second year of it being in America. And now they're going into their fifth season, and it's just pure athletes they have on that field. You know, they are big, strong, fierce, crazy women. So they've all played in the Lingerie Football League for 4 years. So the rebranding of the league as a whole place, and we were the first league to actually be known as the Legends Football League. Okay. And I'm glad we were, because they took away a few pieces from, you know, the lingerie aspect of it. Like, they used to wear, you know, garters and just like frills and stuff like that, that, you know, you don't need. But at the time, that's how the sport was invented. That's how the sport was created, you know. And every year it's gradually, you know, there's been slowly but surely changing bits and pieces. And, you know, this year they removed that bits from it. And, you know, we had literally so many girls from so many different sports try out for it. Like, I don't think there's any other sport in the world that you would get so many people from so many different backgrounds. We had girls like from lacrosse, rugby, CrossFit, you know, volleyball. We even had girls who've done ballroom dancing and cheerleading, and like, I play Gaelic football, and we had an ex-gladiator as well. You know that show, The Gladiators? Yeah. There was a show like that here in Australia a couple of years ago, and we had one of those girls on our team. So it's, you just bring so many different backgrounds of so many different sports together. Like, it really is an amazing bunch of individuals, and, you know, I can only see the sport going from strength to strength. You know, anyone who did at the beginning have something to say and didn't like it, they didn't say it for too long, because they came to our games and that soon shut them up, and they realized that, you know, we are athletes and we're here to play the sport that we now love. We learned it from scratch. You know, it's not like I've just dedicated 15 months of my life to play something I don't love. You know, it's been absolutely crazy. So I think it'll be something Irish people, you know, there'll be a lot of negative things to say about it, but, you know, there's actually a lot of people in Ireland that look on it as a positive thing too, and I've had some brilliant support from home, which I really, really appreciate.
That is Linda Holland from Glengariff, who is playing in the Legends Football League in Australia with Western Australia Angels. It's pretty much NFL. It's 7-on-7, absolutely brilliant sport, and some of the toughest athletes I've ever seen. Really, really fascinating stuff. And thanks, Linda, for taking the call at All Hours in Australia earlier today. And best of luck to her in the future. Loads more still to come. We have reaction from Munster's win over Zebre last night, and we'll talk to the man at the moment, Donegh O'Callaghan, who became the record appearance holder after making his 241st appearance. We'll talk to him, and we'll talk to Aaron O'Callaghan, who will be talking to us ahead of Siam Warriors Revolution, which is coming up in Cork in a few weeks' time. Stay with us.
The Big Red Bench. Cork's Red FM.
You're very welcome back to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. Thanks a million for tuning in this evening. And if you want to contact the show, if you were at Cork and Limerick last night or Munster and Zebre, let us know what you thought. You can text us on 083-317-3336 or else you can tweet us at Big Red Bench. Just before we move on, I want to say congrats to everyone who picked up awards at the Cork City and County Youth Sports Awards on Friday night. The overall winner was Macroom boxer Christina Desmond, who we had on last weekend's show. Real star of the future in the making there. The male winner was jockey Connor King. The basketball star Edel Thornton picked up the female category award. The team award went to Blackrock's minor hurlers, who've had fantastic success over the last few years. And the Hall of Fame winner was Cork City legend Jerry Harris. So all very deserved winners, and especially Christina, Connor, Edel, and the Blackrock Miners. Will be keeping an eye on them in the future. They're all going to go to the very top of their sports. And Jerry Harris, he's at the top of his sport already, so he should be happy enough as it is. We're going to move on to rugby now. Munster are back on top of the Rabo Direct Pro 12 table after last night's 36-8 win over Zebre. Simon Zeebo and Jarrus Slattery scored 2 tries each, and Tommy O'Donnell also touched down for the Reds. It was a very special night for Donnacha O'Callaghan, though, as he became Munster's most capped player ever, winning his 241st cap for the province. And Donnacha spoke to our man Rob Armstrong after last night's game.
First off, I'm joined by Donnacha O'Callaghan, the man, the myth, the legend. Congrats on becoming Munster's most capped player. How's the feel?
Yeah, it's probably something you don't think about, to be honest. You always keep an eye on your own caps, and it's something you would have counted going up, but I'll be honest, I didn't know what other guys were on. And for a Munster man, I think it's right to have a forward top of it. I thought it was Hayes. as soon as I heard it was Raj, it was one to go after. So but it was unfortunate to get it kind of that way with Dave O'Callaghan hurting himself, so I haven't heard about him, but hope he's okay.
And how'd the body feel after the match?
It was a physical game. It was probably good to get on nice and early, but it was their quality opposition, you know, and they don't get enough credit sometimes. So it was I know when we go through the video we'll have lots of work ons, but you know, we're trucking along okay at the moment, so we just need to keep at it, keep being tough on each other, and it's into the meat of the season, really.
Anything else though? I know you've drawn 90+ caps for Ireland. Anything else did you want to achieve in the game, or any things, goals or sights set for the next couple of years?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like it's once you've won and once you've tasted success, you want it the whole time. And and I'm no different to when I ran on there against Edinburgh Reavers when you're 19. You know, you want to achieve. And I'll be honest, I love the lads I play with. I love Munster. It's easy to take bunks out of the bed in the morning, so as I enjoy it, I love it, and I want to achieve. I want to win. I know what it tastes like, and I want us to get back there.
Yeah, and you're a good crop of players at the moment, and building obviously again with the bonus point this week, but building towards the Heineken Cup, and obviously very strong this season again in Europe, and looking to get another bit of silverware.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the ambition for this club. I'll be honest, it's in club province, but it's wrong to kind of think that come the business end we don't want to achieve. And you know, the standard's been set now, and it's been and these guys, you know, like I said, great bunch that are mad keen to push on.
Big congrats to Donnacha O'Callaghan becoming Munster's most capped player last night. 241 appearances for the province, and considering the level Munster have been playing at for the last decade, 15 years, that's a remarkable achievement. And they're going well this season though as well, top of the Pro 12 table, 3 points clear of Leinster after 14 matches. Here's some more reaction from head coach Rob Penny and back row CJ Stander, who also spoke to Rob Armstrong after last night's game.
Yeah, it's nice to leapfrog Leinster at the top. So good to keep, you know, you got to keep chipping away and accumulating points, as you know, and it was nice to get that bonus point with, you know, a little bit of breathing space sort of quarter of an hour to go.
Okay, Donnacha O'Callaghan, what a great appearance tonight. What a player.
Yeah, fantastic. You know, he deserves all the plaudits that he's been given, and just a terrific bloke. Great, we've secured him for 2 more years, and you know, he's going to be a special player for Munster again, and you know, hopefully he can contribute.
Tough few games coming up now in the next number of weeks and months. How are the injuries after the game? How are you looking?
Look, I haven't had a chance to catch up with anyone, but obviously Dave O'Callaghan didn't look good when he came off, which is a real tragedy. He got another issue with a hooker, with Duncan Casey getting a hematoma. There's a couple of spots where we're starting to get a bit thin,
But yeah, we've got two away fixtures now to Welsh sides, which are never easy, and that's going to you know, really test us. So short turnaround as well, and travelling 2 weeks in a row, you know, it's going to be some challenges heading into this last couple of games in this block.
Yeah, a few negatives there, as you said, as David Callan went out injured. But what sort of positives can you take out of the game, bringing forward? You've got the bonus point, the confidence as it going top of the table. But from just a game plan sort of thing, what do you think you can bring against the Welsh sides?
Oh, well, you know, the structure of what we're doing is fine. We're just a bit rusty. We've made a number of changes from last week's game. We're coming off, you know, a couple of weeks off prior. So, you know, this group was just found it a bit tough to find their feet at times. But also, at times, they played some wonderful, wonderful rugby, and it was such a great night. So it was, yeah, pretty pleasing overall.
How were you impressed with Donegal Ryan's comeback after being out since, you know, early November? Seemed to not lack any rustiness, the amount of work that he was going through.
Yeah, terrific. He got around the park well and got the ball in his hands a few times. And, you know, he's not at his prime yet, but he'll get there quickly. And, you know, obviously if the international boys need him, he's ready to go now.
CJ, it was a great win tonight. Tough from the start, looked like a physical encounter. What kind of play, what kind of things did you set out at the start to ensure you got that win tonight?
No, it was just we worked on our game and defence and that stuff this week, and I just think we had a few mistakes here and there in this game, you know, that let us down. But I think going into next week, just keep up the momentum and just try to fix our small mistakes, you know, and then go on to the next game.
Yeah, that's a big thing from last season. You know, you're building momentum in the Rabo this year and bringing it on into the Hiding Cup. So obviously another bonus point win, this is really important to keep that going.
Yeah, we take it game for game, you know, every week, and it's just important to keep the momentum from last year and just keep on building on our game plan, you know, and getting our points on the log.
I noticed you were eager to tap and go a lot, and you set up Tommy O'Donnell's try there in the second half. Was that something you were trying to just keep the ball going, keep the speed up against the Italian side?
Yeah, I just think they're big boys, you know, they're physical boys. I just think I thought to myself, just keep up the tempo, and that's what he said, that the team said before the game and at halftime, just keep up the tempo and then just see what happens in the last 20. And I think that was what I try to do, keep the ball tap and go quickly, you know.
Cheers, CJ.
Thanks, mate.
Well done. You were saying when we were talking to you the last time that you had a really tough week when you came back from your week's break. That showed again tonight at the end there. You were really bullying for Rhodes still, weren't you? You were pushing hard in the 79th minute still.
Yeah, you know, that's what we work for. I must say, to the SNC and the coaches, they set out a plan for us, and that's why we work hard and off weeks, you know. And that helps us the last 20 minutes, the last 10 minutes. Just go on, and get that extra points. It helps us through the season, get the last, when we're behind a few points, just get the last two or three, or last 3 points, you know, and I think that helped us, especially tonight in the last 20 minutes.
Great to see Donica break his record as well tonight.
Yeah, you know, it's when you're on the field and you just hear Donica's coming on, he's always the inspiration, you know, and for me as a youngster still, I think playing alongside a legend like that, still for the next 2 years, I just think it's great. He's a great man, and I wish he could got man of the match. It'll be a great night for him then.
That's CJ Stander, and before him Rob Penny speaking about Munster's win over Zebre last night. Simon Lewis was covering last night's game for the Irish Examiner, and I've been speaking to him about the performance and the weeks ahead for Munster.
It was a professional job. They couldn't really have done much more. I mean, it was a bit laboured at times. They went behind to an early try, which kind of woke them up. They suffered a bit of a blow injury wise. Dave O'Callaghan went down early on as well, with what looks like a serious looking knee injury, but they overcame all those kind of obstacles and got the job done. Two tries from Simon Zeebo, two tries from Jer Slattery, the latest hooker in the Munster front row, and yeah, it all worked out in the end.
Yeah, a lot of people looking at JJ Hanrahan and Ian Keatley because they were playing together, and a lot of people were very excited by it. How do you think their kind of combination worked?
I think that 10-12 partnership, which, you know, is crucial in rugby, especially if you want some sort of creative outlet, it's very important. And I think from what we've seen of the two together, Hanrahan at fly half, Ian Keatley at inside centre, it's pretty exciting stuff, and it's a way to accommodate both players. It gets Hanrahan more game time at fly half, and you've got the added bonus of having, you know, a solid kicker, a solid outlet from Keatley just outside him. So you've got some creative options there. You've got two kicking options as well at 10 and 12. And so far, so good. They had a brief spell late on against Edinburgh in the Heineken Cup at Thomond Park and clicked very well, I thought. And there was some good stuff last night as well. There was JJ's kicking out of hand was a little bit off key, I suppose, if there was a criticism last night. He failed to find touch three or four times against Zebra. But other than that, I mean, we know Hanrahan has great potential and Keatley is proving a very consistent operator as well. And it looks like a good combination.
I suppose when you've JJ at 10, Ian Keatley at 12 and Zebo at 15, I mean, there's so many kicking options there. I suppose, does that make it kind of hard for the opposition to defend because there's so many options there, I guess?
There are plenty of options. I mean, Johnny Murphy can kick as well. Dennis Hurley, who slotted in at 13 as initially and then went to 12 when Keatley went to 10, is another a good, you know, has a good boot on him. But it all depends on how you use that boot. If you use it poorly, you're going to get punished.
Yeah.
But there was some good kicking from, you know, across the back line. You know, it's all about finding space and putting teams on the back foot, and it can create, you know, create mistakes from the opposition. We saw it. Zebo sent a huge kick upfield behind the Zebra fullback last night, and the fullback returned with a slice. And all of a sudden, from, you know, defending on their own 22, Munster on the Zebra 22. So it can transform a game and transform territory.
Yeah, Dennis Hurley, he was tried out in a few BNI Cup games at 13, and I think he might have played at 12 in one of them as well, and he started last night at 13 as well, or he played centre last night at some stage. Do you think he's a viable option going forward? Because like I suppose they could do with a few more options in there.
Exactly. Casey Laulala is leaving at the end of this season for France, and you know, we all know about Munster's finances. There are, you know, you have to wonder if they have the ability to bring in a world-class 13. But so you look at what they have. They started with Johnny Murphy at 13 on Saturday against Zebra. Dennis Hurley came in there and then moved to 12, as I said, and they are all options and you know, pretty viable ones. Whether they're, you know, whether they give Munster that world-class cutting edge at 13 remains to be seen. But in terms of, you know, what whoever comes in as a Munster head coach, then he has at least something to play with, to fall back on.
Joe Schmidt would probably be keeping an eye on Donica Ryan and probably Simon Zebo last night. Did they come through it well, and would you expect them to get a call maybe sometime today?
You'd like to think so. I think Donica Ryan, given, you know, there's some you know, some gaps in that second row availability with Dan Tui going out for the rest of the Six Nations. Paul O'Connell and Devin Toner seem to be the incumbents right now. Mike McCarthy's coming back from that horrific facial wound he suffered against Osprey, so he played for Leinster again at the weekend, so he's another option. And Donica Ryan, first game back since the Perpignan away game in December, did very well. Obviously, he was a little bit rusty after all that time. He's only had 53 minutes since October, you know, that one game against Perpignan. So he's had knee injuries either side of that December outing. And it's a question of getting him more game time. But as Rob Penny pointed out last night, he's such a wealth of experience that he can bring to that Six Nations squad. I'd be very surprised if he wasn't in the reckoning for a bench place at least against England at Twickenham next weekend.
When you look at Munster in the Pro 12, they're actually in great shape. They're 3 points ahead of Leinster, who are in second, but then they're 12 ahead of third place. So it looks like they're on course for a home semi-final, which is such a drastic turnaround from last year's form, isn't it?
It's amazing. They've really got their act together in the league. Last season, of course, Rob Penny's first campaign as Munster head coach, they stuttered and stumbled a bit. Their home form was shaky, particularly at Musgrave Park. They couldn't get any traction going, but he's built some depth now. Those young players he blooded, you know, there's some gain to the pain that was suffered last season, and they've really got their act together in the league. And, you know, topping the league is kind of irrelevant in a way, as you know, with the playoff system that there is in place in the league. So, yeah, that top two place, which gets you the home court, the home semi-final in the Rabo, is all important, and they seem to be on course.
Like the Penny decision to leave at the end of the season was announced a few weeks back. Have you noticed any change in atmosphere around the camp since then, or is it kind of business as normal?
It very much seems to be business as normal. Business as usual. They've had two bonus point wins since he announced he was leaving. So, obviously something's, you know, something's working for them. And they haven't seemed to miss a beat, you know, with all their island players away, such as they are, the core of that team. So, it's all looking good. I'm not sure if he can, you know, pull that fast one, if you like. I don't think if that was what spurred them into action this time, but there's a sense within this squad that they want to, you know, win a bit of silverware for Rob Penny, just to kind of vindicate the last 2 years, because they've had a lot of flack, Penny in particular, for trying to change the Munster ethos, if you like, and the players, certainly the younger players, have embraced it totally, and they want to do well for Rob Penny.
Yeah, like I suppose if they're to secure those top two positions, the next two games will probably will be vital in that. They're which of the two Welsh sides, Ospreys and Scarlets, who are fifth and sixth in the table? Because they'll be missing their international players as well, or whatever international players are actually left in Wales at this point. would you expect Munster to get two wins there, or would one win suffice for you?
I think one would do. They play Ospreys first, so that will give them an idea of where they are. Ospreys next Sunday in Swansea at the Liberty Stadium. That's a tough ask, but nothing they haven't done before. It's also the wheels have fallen off there a couple of times as well. So it's a good indicator of where Munster are at the moment. As you say, there'll be players missing from both sides. It's a tough game, but if they can come through that, even with a losing bonus point, you'd put money on them to beat Scarlets the week after that, which is an international down week, so there might be some trickling back of players for both sides for that one. But I'd say a win and a losing bonus point would do and keep them nicely ticking over.
Finally, just to mention Donnacho O'Callaghan, he reached the magic number 241 last night. A remarkable achievement, isn't it? And he's still offering a lot to the Munster game and the Munster squad, I guess.
He is. He's remarkable, isn't he? I mean, he's always good value. Came on in not ideal circumstances, 18 minutes into the game, put himself about, was his usual, full of energy, full of running, full of hard yards. He keeps delivering for Munster, and he's got plenty left in the tank yet. He's just signed a new 2-year contract. He's flying. He looks after himself. He's one of his idols is Simon Shaw, the England lock who kept going and going until he was 40. Rob Penny has compared him to Brad Thorne, who kept playing till he's 40. So there's plenty of years left in Donnacho O'Callaghan.
Yeah, absolutely, and hopefully there is. That Simon Lewis of the Irish Examiner looking back on last night's win for Munster over Zebre. Finally, we're going to talk Muay Thai for a while. There's less than 2 weeks to go to Siam Warriors Revolution on Leaside. Another sellout crowd is expected for the event at Neptune Stadium on March 1st. The card is headlined by UFC and Strikeforce veteran Paul Semtex Daly, and Corkside FM are proud media partners to the event. One of the bouts that has the potential to be fight of the night, written all over it, is the All-Irish battle between Cork's Aaron O'Callaghan and Tipperary's James O'Connell. Aaron called into us during the week to talk about the fight and the Siam Warriors fighters. He started by telling Rory about his last fight, a draw in Milan, which many felt Aaron did enough to win.
I had a very tough fight against a top Italian opponent. It was actually a rematch from last year in Neptune Stadium, where I beat him on a points decision, one of the fights of the night, actually.
It was, yeah.
And I actually received a horrendous cut that night.
I remember it was gaping, it was like an inch wide on your eye.
It actually went right to the bone, and
you still fought on.
I think it was the third one I got cut, and I came back to the corner, and Martin's face said it all, really did, I goes, Aaron, I think we have to stop the fight. He was, I goes, stop nothing, man, I'm basically have a small fight in the corner, goes, look, you have so much time to make a difference in this fight, you know, really turn it your way and support went to the victory, I believe, you know.
When you get a cut like that, how does it affect you psychologically, like in the fight? I mean, like, are you just backing away from him a lot more and stuff like that?
No, I wouldn't say backing away, no, you know, but they really, what they said to me, I really had to up my game, you know, because they, for my own safety, they said they were going to stop the fight, you know. So I said, basically said, look, you've 1 minute of the fourth round to up your game and do your best to stop him or get the fight in your favour, you know. So it really spurred me on, and I believe I won the money rounds, which are 4 and 5 in Muay Thai, you know.
Yeah.
So I believe I won it comfortably in the end.
I suppose you couldn't really argue with your corner with that kind of advice.
Yeah. But Italy anyway, we the rematch was on, and it was a massive event in Milan, Italy. Huge event, huge stadium. There's about 12,000 seat arena. Massive concerts be held in this arena, and anyway, massive attendance. Some of the best fighters in the world were on it, and it was a pleasure to be on the undercard. And we went toe to toe again. We put on a crowd pleaser. In a lot of people told me it was fight of the night on that event, which is really, really pleasing for me for the standard that was on the event, you know. So
was it always going to be hard to get a decision against an Italian with two Italian judges?
I don't know about that. People say it's hard to get decisions when you fight abroad, you know. But I kind of believe I won the fight. A lot of trainers and fighters said it to me after the fight. I believe I was more clinical. And no, I wouldn't say it was a robbery. Robbery was harsh. He's a top opponent, and it was a great fight, you know. But from a Muay Thai scoring perspective, I believe I was scoring. I was more clinical, and I think I could have taken it. The two Italian judges gave it a draw. The English judge gave it to me, and you know, I'm just, maybe it was hard done by, but look, it was a great fight, and we gave them their money's worth, and that's all that matters,
just
really.
Just chalk it on to one of those nights, is it?
Yeah, really.
You're back in the ring then, like, 4 weeks later. Before getting back in there straight away, or before kind of a break in between training camps?
Whatever the day to set, I really don't mind, you know. March 1st now in Neptune Stadium, I'm fighting James O'Connell from Tipperary. It's been a long time now since I fought an Irish fighter. I don't really get to fight Irish fighters anymore because I've kind of
stepped up
to the Irish rather than the Irish fighters, you know. I'm kind of fighting more Europeans and world standard fighters, but James O'Connell was stepping up to the plate, and I've actually great time for James, you know. We always wish each other luck, and when we fight and stuff. But it's a good fight from an Irish Thai boxing perspective. The Irish fans are really calling for it, and Irish featherweight title is on the line, up for grabs. I really don't want to lose to James because he's trying to take my number one spot, you know.
He wants to make a statement, doesn't he?
I believe the pressure's kind of on me, you know. People are, you know, and he wants to step up to the plate, take my spot, and it's up to me to stop him. And
especially in your home turf as well.
Exactly, on my home turf. Look, as they say, I have a great time for James. I'm sure after the fight we're going to have a good time and a good laugh, but in the ring, business is business, and I will be giving Metro Stadium value for money.
You certainly will, you always do. You've obviously seen him fight before. What kind of fighter is he?
He's a very come forward fighter, I know, very grit and determination. He can take a lot of punishment, as I can do myself, you know. So people are saying Sparks are going to fly in this one, you know, because we're very two come forward fighters. And I just hope my experience will be just that deciding factor, and again, hopefully I'll be taking that victory home and keeping that belt in Cork.
Do you and your team kind of formulate specific game plans per opponent, or do you always just go and fight your own fight?
No, I really don't believe in game plans. I really don't, because as you always know, Rory, things don't always go according to plan. I usually just, from the first round, you might see a lot in Muay Thai, they kind of take it easy in the first round just to suss your opponent out. And which is what I kind of tend to do, and I just go with the flow from the fight. Then there, you know, I'll see what he's like round one, what's working for me, what's not working for me, and maybe the corner. I'll come back to the corner. The corner might spot something to me, tell him this is working, this isn't working, and we'll just take from there, and I'll go with the flow of the fight. So I don't believe in game plans. I don't.
You've fought all over the world, Aaron. Is fighting in Cork that little bit extra special?
I've fought in some massive events now. I've fought in some, as I say, Italy, Thailand, Belgium, England, Scotland. The list goes on. And Cork really is a special place to fight in. You know, the Neptune Stadium, the atmosphere on Neptune Stadium is incredible. I've been to some massive events, and even the event now in Milan in Italy, the attendance, and no, just nothing compares to the Neptune Stadium. The atmosphere, the electricity in the arena, it's incredible. I really can't explain. And these fights, and they come out on DVD afterwards, you know. And people sometimes they might wait for the DVD to come out, and no, the DVD, you have to see these events live if you really want to experience live, because the DVDs do not do justice, you know. And we fit about 2,000 people into a good Siam Warriors event night, and it's incredible, you know, fighting in front of my hometown, and I really love it, you know. So it is my favourite event to fight on.
Besides yourself, there's a wealth of, I suppose, top class Irish talent in this card as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there's some big Irish fighters on it. We have Irish champion Shane O'Neill. He's going to be fighting a top English opponent, Ricky Sewell from England. He's actually the WBC, you know, the green belt that everyone loves. He's the British champion version of that. He's fought all over the world himself. He's only about 19, if I'm right, but he's been there and done it all. He's a top future superstar, you know. We have who else is on from Ireland? We have Cian Dogan versus Darren McFoyle. It's another good Irish domestic matchup there. Cian Dogan always hits hard, brings a good support, and believe me, the atmosphere will be rocking for his fight too. Always is. I believe Darren McFoyle is bringing a good crowd from Dublin too. Johnny Sheehan versus Cian Coley. Again, Johnny, big support, very come forward fighter, really up his game the last year or two, and against another Irish champion, Cian Coley. So that's another good fight to look forward to on the Irish card, you know.
Really looking forward to all those fights, and the two headline fights then as well. We've got a cracking fight between Enrico Kell and Jordan Watson. These are two of the top guys in the sport.
Yeah, Jordan Watson is at that weight division, he probably is number one, you know. Well, from a European perspective, you know, he's incredible. His balance, his physique, his accuracy. Jordan Watson is the man. Like, you know, he's incredible. He's been there. He's done it all. He's fought all over the world. He's making big money now for himself, in fairness to him. He was actually here a couple of years ago against a French champion, Cedric Muller. That really did raise the bar for Irish Thai boxing here. You know, that was Martin Horgan's first major promotion fight he promoted, and to this day people still talk about that fight. It's actually on YouTube if anyone wants to look it up. You know, Jordan Martin versus Cedric Muller, you just see the standard and the class, you know. It is an incredible fight to watch, but he's up against March 1st now in Neptune. He's up against his German opponent, Enrico Kell. Very come forward fighter again, bit of a pest, if that makes sense. He will be in Jordan's face, you know. It will be a good, interesting clash of styles. He's very dangerous. He's very dangerous elbows as well. In Rinko, he will come forward. His grit, determination against Watson's accuracy will be a very interesting fight, you know.
And Paul Daly coming as well. I suppose a lot of people know him for his UFC stint, which ended, I suppose, poorly when he punched Josh Koscheck after the bell. But he's going to bring a lot of, I suppose, neutral fans, almost like new people to the sport. Maybe that might come up much to the event.
Absolutely, yeah. Paul Daly, you know, he's well known for being a very vicious, powerful fighter, incredible knockout power.
He hasn't fought much Thai before, has he?
He actually has. He comes from a Thai boxing background, believe it or not. He's actually said many, many times it's his favourite art to fight, you know. So he's stepping back into his comfort zone, you know, his more stand-up game. So it will be interesting, though. He's fighting an incredible, a very, very hard Russian fighter, Alexander Storenko. He's actually signed at the moment with Glory. They're another stand-up fighting organisation. I think he's ranked number 2, number 3 there. And very hard hitter, like himself, like Paul Daly. They're going to be two very hard hitters coming forward, hitting each other.
Massive game last night in Temple Hill. Dolphin beat Cork Conn 9-6 in a really tight contest in the Ulster Bank League Division 1A. Barry Keeshan and Rory Scannell kicked the points for Dolphin, while Gerry Hurley got two penalties for Conn. Let's hear from the winning Dolphin side now. Here's Steve Ford, the head coach, Christy Conn, the captain, and Chris Rowe speaking after the game.
Definitely, I think overall we worked harder than what they were over the 80, and I think we deserved it, you know. From start to finish up front, I think we had a bit of an advantage, and we kept at it. You know, it wasn't a game for wits tonight. It was a game just to look after the ball, play territory and get your points, and I think overall we've done it better, you know.
Must be very satisfied, Steve, to have recorded a double over Cork on the other end this year, I believe the first time in Dolphin history.
Yeah, great. You know, I said that to the boys going in there. I know I had a feeling we'd do well tonight. It was pretty hard. We haven't had a game for 3 weeks now since Ballinahitch with the game being called off, but you know, today to get a double over these in the season, I think is great. It's really, really good step, you know.
And ahead of the game, Steve, you were short a couple of key players. The guys who stood up really did do a good job, especially at set piece for you.
Oh, fantastic. You know, Damien came down from Dublin. He's been up there working wise. You know, Will come in for scans. You know, Scott, there's quite a few of the pack, but the boys who have been there have been fantastic, and they've set the kind of bar for the boys to reach when they come back, if they do, you know.
An unbelievable victory, to be honest, especially with the
with the conditions and stuff like that, you know. I thought we really dug in deep, and to come over here and not to concede a try against a great Clan team, and it's the first time in the history of the club we've done the double over them, and it's a great feeling.
And on your own personal point of view, it was a powerful scrum there tonight, Christy.
Yeah, good scrum, happy enough. There's a lot more than me in that scrum though, to be honest with you. There's another seven men, and I thought those seven men were outstanding as well.
And Christy, you could have gone either way in the end. You were lucky that you didn't have to count on missed kicks by both sides, really. But it was tough defending for a while, and you had 5 minutes of attacking in the last few minutes.
Yeah, I thought we kept them to a minimum, you know. We gave them minimum scoring opportunities, and to be honest, if you do that against that kind of a side, they'll struggle, you know. And fair play, our defence held firm, and we didn't really give them any chances.
Well, obviously, with the conditions as well, two local clubs, great rivalry, and it was a tough game. Two big set of forwards, and look, we came out in the end, but it could have gone either way with the conditions. It was definitely a leveller tonight.
A very physical battle. You seem to be showing the scars of it on your face, Chris. There was a little bit of a fracas in the first half. Two men sin-binned. Was there lucky that there wasn't any more?
No, I wouldn't say so. That's what rugby's all about, local rivalry, you know, competitive, and you know, boys playing for their clubs, and look, and we'll all enjoy a pint afterwards now.
So Chris, it was a great win for you tonight. It was a close game, just 3 points in the end. A sweet one for yourselves.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, it's the first time we've done a double of a Cork one since I've been over here, and it's a good few years now, so it's a fantastic win for us. Just hoping we can just drive on with this. There's still a few games left to play for, and it's important that we just get a few more wins under our belt.
And your colleague, Christy Condon, the team captain, it was his 100th cap for Dolphin tonight. A nice victory for him to celebrate that milestone.
Oh, definitely. Christy's a stalwart of the pack. You know, he's the cornerstone. He's a tight end. You know, he's a great leader, a great man, and a great player. And I'm delighted for him personally as well.
You're listening to the Big Red Bench on Cork's Red FM. That was the Dolphin trio of Steve Ford, Christy Condon and Chris Rowe speaking after last night's win over Cork Conn and Temple Hill. 9-6 is how it finished. A real battle and a historic moment for Dolphin. The first time they've done the double over Conn in the Ulster Bank League. The table is as follows. Clontarf are top alongside Old Belvedere on 40 points each. Then Cork Conn are in third place on 31 points, so 9 points back on the leaders. Dolphin, after that winner, up to 6th place. They're on 26 points. And thanks to Richie Whelan as well for that audio from the game last night. Going to talk domestic football now. Cork City continued their pre-season today with a 3-1 win over Longford Town in Bishopstown. Michael Rafter scored twice and Mark O'Sullivan scored a cracker late on as City build up to the game against St. Pat's in Turner's Cross on March 7th. Slowly but surely getting there. Neil Horgan called into studio after today's game to speak to me about all things Cork City.
Longford Town are going to be strong in the first division this year. They've signed around 4 players from Shamrock Rovers. Not all of them played today, but it was good. John Caulfield told us like it was going to be a hard test, and that's what it proved. But we came out winners in the end, and it's been a good pre-season so far. You know, we've won most of the games, which is good, I suppose.
Yeah, you got 10 minutes yourself?
Yeah, 10 minutes, that's about all I can do these days. The old knee and the body, really. Unfortunately, I can't train during the mornings. The lads are going back training in the mornings.
Yeah.
So I'm working. I'm a solicitor in town, so I can't train, so it kind of limits my ability to kind of be fit, really, to an extent. So I'll see how it goes. I'm enjoying it, like, and I used to play with John before as well, so I'm looking to help him out as much as I can, you know.
Is that strange that he's the manager now?
Yeah, it is a little bit, I suppose. But it's fine, like I got on with him, so yeah, it's fine. I suppose if I didn't get on with him when I was playing with him, it might be worse. But it's nice. Like, thing with John is he knows the club inside out, and I suppose I've been around the club a long time too, so it's good when someone who knows the club inside out comes in, because they're not making mistakes necessarily the same way as someone new, say from Dublin for example, would come in and maybe not recognise the fact that, say, Jerry Harris is a very important part of the club or something like that. John knows that, and you know, that makes a difference, I think, you know.
And like even when you play with him, did he have the kind of leadership qualities back then that kind of you take on and be a manager?
Well, there's definitely certain common features between him as a manager now and when he was a player. Like, he's definitely really focused and as a manager and as a player, and really kind of in your face in a good way about the game. And it comes across in his management style as well. It's kind of, you're up and at them and just don't give them a chance to breathe and kind of, you know, it's an emphasis on kind of putting the other team under pressure. And I think it'll work for us quite well, because we probably haven't been focusing on that for the last few years. It's been more about kind of, I don't know, keeping the ball and stuff. We'll be doing that too, but I think John sees the other side of it in terms of getting results, and hopefully that will play a part this year.
Yeah, just on the game today, I saw that Mark O'Sullivan scored, and there's a few lads who've come in from Avondale and Munster League and stuff.
Fantastic.
Like that. And like I suppose like maybe some other managers mightn't look at those players necessarily, and John's giving these guys a chance.
He is, and he's right to. I would have been a proponent of giving as much Munster League fellas a chance as possible. I mean, at least it's a clear path for fellas who do well in the Munster League. They can look at it and say, do you know what, maybe I'll get into the Cork City team if I could do that, and maybe I'll go further. If like Mark has done very well, Kevin Mulcahy has done very well. I was aware of both of them for a long time. I played with Kevin with Douglas Hall, and like Kevin came back from England, and now it's a second chance for him, and he's doing very well. He's got a great left foot, and Mark got a fantastic goal today, so all the better. I think, you know, Cork football does need that link between the Munster League and the, I suppose, League of Ireland representatives, and the stronger the links, the stronger we all are, you know.
And like physically, are they far off what's required for League of Ireland?
Mark and Kevin certainly aren't physically far off at all. I mean, if anything, Mark is physically as strong as anyone in the League of Ireland. Kevin too. But I suppose it's a different psychology of training every day, and it'll be difficult. I know I've spoken to both of them during pre-season, and particularly pre-season is a tough time to be kind of almost a full-time player. I know both of them are working also, but they have to be at training every day, whereas say I'm not at the moment, so they're different. They're more committed to playing with Cork City. So if you're training every day in the mornings, it kind of can play with your head a little bit. Am I a full-time player? What does that mean? And if you have a bad day's training, how do you deal with it the next day? Whereas if you're training Tuesday and a Thursday and playing a match the weekend, it's more casual really, and training isn't as important. So that's the step, I think, more than anything. Once they're on the pitch, they're as good as anybody, and they're proving it. And I think, in fairness to the two of them, they've committed to training properly, and they've really come in and been a big plus to the squad so far.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Have you seen guys go both ways down through the years in terms of adapting well?
Yeah, well, Mark is an example himself, and he'll tell you that, because he was with us before. Like, I would say a lot of Munster League fellas would say he's probably one of the standout players in the Munster League for the last 5-6 years perhaps. Yeah. Like, with all the victories Avondale have had, they've had a fantastic team and squad, but Mark has been probably their best player maybe. He came to us twice. I think once was under Paul Doolan and once maybe under Damien Richardson. I'm not sure, you'd have to ask Mark. But he found it difficult. It was just, I suppose, I remember, I think, under Paul Doolan, and it was a tough time. The club was going through kind of financial problems, and Paul Doolan had a certain style. And the fact that John is there now, it really helps Mark, you know, and because he knows how good he is. And he knows he can back him and say, okay, Mark, you didn't play well today. Maybe you're struggling at training, whatever. But I've seen how good you are, you know, on Munster Senior League level, playing the Intermediate Cup finals and stuff. So I know how good you are. Same with Kevin. So, like, he gives them the benefit of the doubt for a period, which they deserve, like, you know.
Yeah, like, that might lead me on to just asking you about that Shamrock Rovers B team. Do you think there's scope for maybe a Cork City B team, giving guys like Mark, we'll say, back in the day, his chance at First Division and see how they got on and stuff like that? Is there enough players around, even, of quality to kind of put a good team up?
I think Cork, like, when people talk about Cork Hibs and Cork Celtic, they seem to do well when there was two League of Ireland clubs here. The problem is, financially, is there, you know, the backing for it? Yeah. There's always players in Cork. I mean, the amount of players who've gone to England from Cork City, like, I was counting them the last day. I think there's 12 players in the England, like, I think there's 3 in the Premiership who say I've played with, and there's 6 or 7 in League 2, League 3, whatever. I think there's 12 or 13 guys. Yeah. So the standard is always very high in Cork. It's not as fragmented as in Dublin in terms of League of Ireland representation. That's a strength, really, I suppose, for Cork City. Where there's room for a B team for Cork City, perhaps. I know it'll probably strengthen Shamrock Rovers' hand, because they can sign a lot of players in Dublin and say, young players, and say, look, you're going to train with the first team, and if they do well, they'll keep them. But if they don't, then they haven't lost anything out of it, except perhaps the money of funding a second League of Ireland team with the travelling expenses that are involved in that.
You've seen a lot of squads in pre-season with Cork City. How's this one matching up?
Yeah, it definitely matches up, you know. I think there's a lot of newness about the group, and but also there's a lot of old players like myself, but even a lot of established fellas that's still there, which is good. I think John knows, like, the thing about John is he knows a player, I think, better than maybe some a lot of other managers. So I think it's shaping up well. I do think we're not the finished product or anything like that, but like, we finished, say, sixth last year, and we'd be hoping that, you know, we'd be competitive, very competitive this year, and hopefully we can improve on that, you know.
What's it like when you look around and see Danny Murphy, Dan Murray, Liam Kearney around? Is it kind of, do you think, hang on a second, what year am I in here?
Yeah, it's great. It's great. We'd have a laugh about things, you know, old stories. And Darren Murphy is back as well. Yeah. Danny Murray, yeah, Liam Kearney, Conley Healy's been around a long time, Mark McNulty. So there's a core group that are, you know, been here a while, and I suppose the majority are Cork lads, or, you know, Danny Murphy and Danny Murray are more or less Cork, you know, adopted Cork lads at this stage. Yeah. So it's great. It's great. It's like a little reunion. But I mean, in other senses, it's all about what you can do on the pitch. And as soon as fella can't do it, they have, you know, it doesn't matter if you get on with fellas or not. You have to do it on the pitch, and the lads know that more than anybody, I think.
Yeah, because there is such a group of you back together from, I suppose, the successful period. What's that? Maybe 7-8 years ago now at this stage.
Yeah.
Like, psychologically, is it kind of hard to kind of rev yourself up and get back into that mentality that you had back then, because it is so many years later? Or is the fact that you're all together again maybe kind of developing that a little bit more?
Yeah, it definitely helps. I think what helps is that you have league winners, I think, helps, you know. It's like, even Billy Dennehy is coming back with league winners medals as well. I forgot to mention him. Anthony Elding has league winners medals. As much as it's good that we all get along, and that it's about experience too, and we have a lot of league winning medal guys in the team, and we have a lot of good young fellas too. So yeah. I think, you know, it's a combination of things, but I think things are looking good.
Yeah. Oh, what do you see your role as this season?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm there to kind of help the team as much as I can. If I can play any bit, I'm happy. But other than that, it's more or less, you know, my hobby at this point. And yeah. I'll see how it goes. Kind of, work is my priority, you know. And John knows that anyway. So I'm happy to lend a hand more than anything else. And if I get some game time, great. If I don't, I won't be too upset about it either, you know.
Yeah, but like obviously you love the club and you love being involved, and I suppose that'll never change, I guess.
Yeah, it's great. Like, and I think John brings back a certain kind of certain feature of the club. Like he reminds you of the 1990s, like, you know, when I was supporting the club, you know, and not playing. And I think he'll bring a lot of fans back, you know, especially initially. I think if we do well, we might keep those, you know, maybe an extra 1,000, an extra 2,000 if John and the lads do well.
Yeah.
Because he'll bring a kind of style from back then as well, and an intensity from back then. And you know, it's exciting, actually. It's exciting. It's probably the reason I'm still hanging in there, just to kind of feed off that excitement, you know.
Yeah.
And I do think we'll do quite well.
Yeah. Is it hard to take that step back and just, like you said, be kind of a bit part player? And
yeah, it is, I suppose. But like, I know my limitations at this point. Like, I can't run like some of the lads can run.
Yeah.
So while it's hard in one way, you just have to accept it and accept what you can do and what you can't do. And like, I'm fortunate enough to have played for as long as I did, and what I do enjoy is playing with the young lads, and I think most fellas would say that to you. They kind of keep you young, you know. Yeah. And I like the banter and all that, but it is hard to, I suppose, step back and not be competitive, you know. You do want to be competitive. You don't want to be, you know, just hanging in there for the sake of it. Like, if I get a chance to play, I'll try and be as competitive as I can.
That's Neil Horgan of Cork City speaking about today's win over Longford in pre-season and ahead to the season ahead, which gets underway on the 7th of March against St. Pat's and Turner's Cross, talking about his aims for this season as well. Very interesting from Neil, as always.